This is CliffCentral.com. Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs. I like that song. It put me in a good mood. How are you feeling today, Fubi?
I'm really feeling great. I'm just like chilled and I'm in the zone and I'm in this great space.
I'm really, really pleased to hear that because, well, we're hosting a show together, so I need you there.
No, well, I'm with you.
What is the show all about? Those who haven't heard us before, there's lots every week, new people coming in wanting to hear what we're all about because I mean, Future CEOs is a great brand. What do we do here?
You know what? I was thinking about this morning, and with everything that's going on in our varsities, colorblind, Access, Fits, SRC, Tux, corporate SA is just not giving people their full potential. There's so many barriers. So this is the show to really kickstart your entrepreneurial spirit. Mm. On Future CEOs, we amplify, we advocate, and we catalyze for you to grow your business and fast-track your career. So now is the time. The time is now.
So well said, and that's exactly right. So guys, if you are a young up-and-coming entrepreneur, future CEO, someone that really, really wants to push and grow, then you must join us every week. But this week, we are talking to a very interesting individual. I struggled with
all of them are interesting all the time.
Yeah, they're all fantastic all the time. I struggled with this a little bit. Let me introduce it this way. We're talking lessons from a tech solopreneur or a solo techpreneur. What do you have it down as?
What is that? Let's break it down first.
What is that? What is a solopreneur? When you hear solopreneur, what do you hear?
You're doing it on your own.
You're doing it on your own, exactly. And then, of course,
tech
solopreneur.
Tech is tech. Okay.
So obviously someone out in that space doing it, and there are a lot of them out there. We've met a number of them that come here, and they have quite a journey. So we decided to pull our young friend here, David Kaplan, in from Value Forest. David, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
What's up? Hi.
So just give everyone a sense of who you are and what you do. Tell us a little bit about Value Forest as well, please.
Okay. So my name is David Kaplan, and my background is software development. Mm-hmm. And I worked at a large corporate for nearly 4 years, mm-hmm. Doing back-end development, iPhone apps, etc. And then basically one day, I started wanting to do something on the side, like a side type project, and being in the tech space and being much of a software geek kind of thing. So I basically, I'm a big fan of classifieds and finding good deals on classifieds, etc. So I started trying to come up with a tool for myself to basically make it easier to find the best bargains and best deals across all the classifieds quickly and easily without having to like hassle too much. And that's basically how Value Forest started. So it was just initially for myself, and then I shared it with a couple of friends and a few tech forums and got people's feedback, and then I kept improving it. And yeah, 2 years later, and we're nearly on 80,000 users a month. So
that's great.
Yeah.
So firstly, it was yourself, and then you realize it was useful for the masses. It was
exactly.
Useful for other people.
Exactly.
You know what? That's the basic DNA of any startup, correct, Gareth?
Yeah, it's quite common. Yeah.
I like the word you use, DNA. It really is. Right at the very core of every startup should be the phrase, am I scratching my own itch?
Yes.
And that sounds exactly. Like what you did, right?
Yeah, that's often the best way to get a really good success. A really good startup is often something that's scratching your own itch.
Okay.
Because then you really understand the problem space and you're really passionate about it. Whereas just seeing an opportunity that seems like it could make money, but you don't really understand it, you're not involved in it, those don't necessarily do as well.
Mm.
But
yeah, and the word you use is understanding. I think if you're selling a product, if you're putting something out there really needs to be an empathy, a real solid understanding of what's going on in that person's headspace.
Exactly.
Maybe more than headspace, but also just their experience, what's happening immediately around them. And so you did it for yourself. Just tell us a little bit about you, though. So go back a few years. Who is David Kaplan? Where did this all begin?
So David Kaplan is, I suppose...
Don't you just love it when people refer to themselves in the third person?
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
It feels quite weird.
But do it again and then go.
So David Kaplan has a technical, inquisitive background.
Okay.
And ever since childhood, I've been taking electronics apart, breaking things, that kind of usual stuff, with no idea how to put them back together.
Okay.
And and learning. I was encouraged by my father from quite a young age to like play on computers and laptops and get quite comfortable with technology from a pretty young age. Mm. And then, yeah, I don't know, then it kind of evolved and I was interested in it at school, so I did software. I did IT at school and then I got into programming and then I studied it and took it from there.
So you left the corporate world thinking that it just didn't give you that creative freedom.
Exactly.
Yes, you're tech, but you're still creative. You know what I mean? And you just needed to do something for yourself and something to release that artistic form.
100%.
How was that moving from corporate and then finding yourself an incubator and the support structure to Value Forest?
Yes. So initially it was pretty scary because, I mean, while I'm still young and I don't have huge expenses and liabilities and things like that, it was still pretty scary leaving this comfortable paycheck that I got used to for 4 years, you know. And so thankfully I had some mentors and people that were encouraging me that now's a great time, go give this a shot. Because I'd already ran Value Forest for a year or whatever already on the side. I'd started building up enough traction that I had a certain amount of confidence in it.
You know what? It's always important to say that don't just immediately leave your regular salary and start up your own thing. You know, start doing it on the side and make it a gradual process.
Now, what's so important about this, and I need to jump in here, is in the next half hour, we're going to be talking some of the mistakes, the legal mistakes that entrepreneurs make when they start their businesses.
That might be one of them.
This could be one of them, especially if you start something and you're employed by someone.
Yes.
To one extent or another, you can become liable.
Depending on your contract,
yes. Yeah, exactly. So you must look at that very, very carefully. So from a legal perspective, please review before you just jump in and start doing stuff and telling people about ideas that you have.
Agreed.
Sorry, David, go on. You were talking about your journey.
Yeah, no, so sorry, I just lost my train of thought. I was just saying, yeah, that the challenge of jumping from that, but also just to add on your point about being able to do it part time before jumping, is I learned that if you have enough determination and focus, you know you can cut out a couple of hours of TV at night and actually achieve like quite a lot, quite substantial with your nights and weekends, depending on how badly you want to try to do something. So that a full-time job isn't, while it's a challenge, it's not necessarily a complete limitation, especially in the tech space. That's the big advantage. Obviously, if you're doing something that requires, you know, sales with people during the day or something where you have to be physically involved or phoning people, then it's a challenge. But in something with the beauty of tech is you can do that, you know, in your own space, on your own laptop at home, and take it from there. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the great things I think about tech startups is how little capital, resources, people you need. I mean, with one person and the power of the internet and a bit of programming knowledge and a passion and determination to want to actually do something, I think you can go quite far.
Tell us a little bit more, David, about this journey and your mentorship and your support structure.
Yeah.
Coming into creating Value Forest.
So the one thing that's helped me quite a lot is I obviously looked into the different hub type options, and there are a few up and coming in Joburg. So I did find a hub that seemed to work for me.
Okay.
And I've been there pretty much ever since.
Just tell us who they are. So, I mean, we're talking tech. Solopreneurship here. So
yeah.
who what was the right fit for you? Who were they?
So they're called Josie Hub.
Okay.
And they're in 44 Stanley.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's very much a mix of people there. It's not just tech entrepreneurs. It's designers. It's all sorts of things. Artists. A whole bunch of different people and.
Yeah, a real hodgepodge, but really the right fit for you, right?
Yes. I think it's been very important because I always knew that a big challenge for myself would be, you know, I wouldn't be able to do this. I'm the kind of person, I need to get out, etc. And, you know, trying to do this just at home by myself would be a terrible idea.
Mm.
And I know I'd like, you know, drive myself into, I don't know, like a slump or some sort of where I wouldn't be able to work. So the idea of going to a place, I think, is pretty
definitely,
psychological,
definitely.
Even if it's a coffee shop, which I've been doing sometimes for a change of scenery.
Okay.
I think that's pretty crucial. So, for me.
So what I hear you saying is that there are certain challenges that come along with this side of everything. It's not just something you can pour 14 hours a day into, you know, poring over a computer. You actually do need that interaction, no matter what kind of introvert you may think you are.
Exactly.
You do need that there. So just you've mentioned you've gone to coffee shops, you've established some relationships at a hub.
Yes.
Other things that you've done in this area, just so that other people who are in your same space can get a sense of what they can do.
Yeah. So hubs and coffee shops. Meetup groups can also be great.
Okay.
I've tried one or two meetup groups, and I've been on one or two like bootcamp accelerator programs.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And then online stuff. Is there value there, or are we actually advocating, let's get in front of someone, let's have a real interaction?
From a community point of view, yeah. I have been quite active in entrepreneurship forums and things.
Okay.
More from a learning point of view, but not South Africa specific context.
Okay.
I think, to my knowledge, that's still quite limited, the online South African entrepreneurship. But online can be great, but I think there's something quite crucial to actually meeting people, engaging. Mm. I mean, I've got a few people that I'm, you know, pretty friendly with now at the hub, and bounce things off them, and they bounce things off me, and
just that human value.
That human value,
yeah, the human touch. Yeah.
You can't really replace
you
that
can't
with digital.
Absolutely, no. And financial support.
So financial support, that's another thing where quite advantageous is basically that the costs are very low on software development if you're a developer yourself.
Mm.
So, I mean, you literally, all you're looking at is server costs, hosting costs, and maybe an initial laptop or whatever you need.
Do you know what any of that meant to me?
Why now must we say, why must the little girl be
I'm
like
asking because I didn't know. sorry, yeah. David, go on.
So basically.
I'm learning.
That's why I would encourage people to, if they can, to learn programming, etc., because that's a crucial skill to take entrepreneurship, and it can save you a fortune of money. Mm. Because I've actually said this to a few people. If I wasn't in a tech background and I had to pay a development company,
correct,
I'd be probably spending a few hundred thousand rand.
Correct.
And then the risk's much higher, because at the moment all I've risked is my time, and I've learned a lot on the way, so I haven't really lost anything. But if you know there'd been money involved, then I'd be talking alone, and etc. And so that's the beauty, I think, of being a tech, and also just to add how easily available it is now. There's things like Code Academy and all sorts of websites that can literally guide you from like zero knowledge of programming. All the resources are there. You just have to want to go get them and tap into them. But I think now is definitely the time.
It really is. Let's talk then, not time, I like that word, time. Let's talk the timeline of Value Forest.
Right.
So you started somewhere, you developed into something along the way. So there was an evolution.
Yes.
But just let's talk, so you started in a garage, or you started in your bedroom, but then you moved, you evolved. What's the right pace? Because often what we'll do is we'll have a great idea, no, let's get offices, let's make it look sexy, but that's not the way that we should be doing things.
So I've thought and spoken about that quite a bit to people, and for me personally, what I found very, very useful and very necessary is an adaptive type model. There's often a perception where people, they first worry about, you know, I want the perfect name, and let me go register the .com, and let me get my office space, and let me get a really cool logo. I first just put this really ugly looking website up that achieved the very core basic functionality, which kind of follows the process of these lean startup type.
That's your minimal viable product.
Exactly.
Right?
And you get people interested, and you see that they're interested, and then you iterate and you adapt. So you start to polish the website up, and I've done that over a year. So so the product is now very different to what it started as. But often some people have this perception, you know, they only get one chance and they have to release their product and it has to be amazing. And that's kind of a fallacy that doesn't really that it doesn't have to work that way, and people will give you another chance for your business to improve if they're seeing you adding real value. So I think,
and you know what, also people are attracted to something that's authentic.
Yes.
And it's about longevity and staying power. So if you started off with a very simple website, and because your core value or core service or core product is improving and is stuck to what it originally has been, you know, that is a sure deal when it comes to consumers. I mean, that's just my 5 cents.
No, I like it. There must be this idea of consistency. So let's go back into the timeline.
Yes.
Talk us through that consistency that was always there, the golden thread. There must have been stuff around it, but what was the golden thread that just kept everything going?
Well, I mean, the core value of the whole thing was obviously being able to search multiple websites in one place. And while there were, you know, different levels of coding of features and usability, and the core functionalities stayed the same and improved. And so the focus point didn't really change. I mean, often with startups, things do definitely change.
Yes.
Obviously, a famous example is Facebook, that was, you know, intended for Harvard students, and you know, now it's absolutely everything. So it's very hard to know. I mean, I'm not even sure this is where the business is going to end.
Yes.
You often have to kind of just follow the road and see where it goes. Opportunities come up in random weird places. Talk to people, meet new people, and you land up, with interesting different angles.
David, let's talk about the challenges of going head-to-head with big or gigantic businesses, being a startup yourself.
Yes. So, no, that certainly is challenging. It's kind of a David Goliath type thing.
Yeah.
So there's obviously pros and cons. You're much smaller, you're more agile, you can change things, you know, quite quickly and easily because you don't...
Give us a personal example. What did you go through?
So in my case, they're not really so much as competitive. I have an interesting relationship with the websites, Gumtree, OLX, Junkmail, etc., because I'm aggregating those websites, so I'm actually bringing them, you know, users.
Yes.
No, more business.
Yes.
So while I'm sort of competing that people would use my site to find the others, I'm not fully competing. So it's a bit of a different relationship. So, yeah.
Let's then talk about that relationship then. How did you develop that relationship? So immediately maybe they're looking at it and they're saying, wow, this is competition. What did you do in order to make sure that they were on board, that there was something a little bit more to it than just this idea of competition? Where did you go? What did you do?
So initially that was a concern of mine, and it almost stopped me doing anything because I thought initially, they're all going to, I don't know, suddenly start suing me, or there's going to be huge problems. And I nearly backed down from that, but I had one or two mentors who kind of said to me, these were people that were experienced in business and had the confidence to say, go do it. And when they start to complain, you're actually doing well. And then you, then you know you actually have something.
Absolutely.
So while I'm not condoning, like, you know, doing anything illegal, to a point you have to be determined and push in business. And when you're small, often, you know, it's obviously easier to extinguish potential
Walk
threats
over.
And
yes,
things.
Yes.
So obviously, if you go ask them when you're about to start, should I start this, they'll probably say no, you know. So sometimes I think the ask forgiveness versus permission route can work. So, I mean, you have to do it carefully. And there's not like a fixed answer for any situation. But yeah, I think sometimes you have to challenge the rules to a certain extent.
Very nice. Okay. Challenges that you have had. I like it. He just introduces all the words here. So we're talking about timeline, challenges. Let's talk about your key three challenges that you faced on this journey that you've had thus far.
Okay. So the first challenge I would probably say was the challenge of taking the full-time leap, which I've kind of spoken about already. So that was probably the initial challenge. And then perhaps one of my biggest challenges is focus. Partly my nature, but partly because it's just me. It's very, obviously, in a normal 9-to-5 job, you go in, your boss says, okay, you need to do X, Y, Z today. And you just do it, you know? But when no one's telling you to go in, no one's telling you what to do, you have to actually say, hang on, is this the best angle to work on my business now? Like, I've been conflicting. Should I be focusing on my Android app, or should I actually focus on features, or should I focus on... And it's very hard to know. I mean, obviously, things like customer feedback and stuff can help guide you.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But that's... Focus is a big challenge of mine.
Mm. Number three?
Sorry, it's a challenge that you're facing now. Is it a... one or two key things that you've done to help with the focus?
So one or two things are actually write stuff down.
Okay.
Like, I've actually been trying this thing now. It's called the Lean. It's based off the business model canvas. It's like it's called the Lean Canvas. It's like a simplified version for startups. And it's quite cool. It's an online website where you, it's almost like a modern day quick business plan.
Okay.
And writing that stuff down, it kind of helps me focus a bit as to what am I actually trying to achieve.
Okay.
Because if you try just keep your customers in mind and, you know, your mission and your goals, that can help to a point in clarifying, should I be doing this or should I be doing that?
I guess just to add to that, Hlubi and I, we were at a meeting the other day, and what they use in their organization are strategy pyramids. And those are very good as well. So you start at a particular point and you filter down and you just determine what are the broad strokes to develop this thing, that this gargantuan thing that you really want to develop here.
Yes.
Let's go on to that third point, the third challenge.
So the other big challenge for me is basically loneliness, because it's a real thing.
Great point, David.
No one likes to admit it, but at the end of the day, as one entrepreneur, it's hard with a partner, etc. You know, you have each other to bounce off. So the one day the one's feeling lazy, the other says, you know, get up, let's go do this, or the one says this. So I think that's, so while there's definitely pros and cons of solo entrepreneurship, I would say that's quite a big challenge. So that's also why things like hubs help a lot.
Correct. Mm.
Because even though you're on your own mission, being on your own mission with other people on their own missions, you know, still makes it more comfortable. And so that's, I would say, hubs and places like that have helped that to a point. I mean, it's still an ongoing challenge for me occasionally. But yeah, I'm kind of working on that, and I'm always looking for partners, but if you didn't happen to start with the right person, it's challenging to find the right partner, because I mean, it's often compared to a marriage kind of thing.
Mm.
And when you started something and it's your baby, etc., it's quite challenging to someone just walk along and you're like, hey, yeah, you know.
Mm. Yep.
So that's a challenge.
That's great. 3 points, David. What next in 5 years time?
Yeah, I'm kind of asking myself that all the time. I often kind of try to picture future of where I'm going, and it's very hard to know. I don't think, especially in this day and age with technology, anything can come along in the next week or two or month or year, and things can change. New phones, new devices, virtual reality, I don't know, whatever it is. So it's very hard to know where things go. So I think all you can really do is go day by day, and have an idea of what you're trying to achieve, but be open to adapt to that. So I don't really know exactly what's in store. I mean, obviously, I'd like to keep growing the business if I can replicate it and add value in other countries, etc. That's one angle I'm looking at.
Mm. But what I do hear coming out, and we must emphasize this over and over and over again, is focus.
Yes.
We must be focused in our area. So
no, it is. It's
what happens
very hard.
What happens in 5 years, we just mustn't be distracted.
Yes.
I think that's the bottom line.
Yes.
Just stay the course. You've got a product that's working. You said 80,000 people are coming on every month.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very
Fantastic.
Much.
How long has it been around?
So I basically started the development, I kind of got the first version out in May 2014.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a really good
and
number.
And all the best. Keep on going strong.
Thanks so much.
We have run out of time, unfortunately,
okay.
David, but thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing with all those other tech solopreneurs or solo techpreneurs, what are we calling them, out there. Thank you very much, and I know that they're very grateful. Up next, guys, we are going to be talking 5 legal mistakes that startups seem to be making on a regular basis.
The Lex Nove boys are back.
Yeah, our favorite lawyers. I mean, is that even a statement you can make? They'll be back with us after the break. We'll see you then.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.